Firstly, just to say thank you very much for inviting me to come and speak. This presentation isn't just a product of my work, it's also the work of my colleague, friend and PhD supervisor, Professor Jan Oyebode, who works at the University of Bradford. Jan and I have been on quite a journey together in the last few years. I'm now in the fifth year of doing my PhD, which is exploring the impact of frontotemporal dementia on family relationships. And at the start of that journey, one of the very strong issues for me was the importance of not only addressing the impact on the person and their partner or the person primarily involved in supporting them, but also on the wider family. As my title highlights, I work with younger people with dementia now, but throughout my career I've worked with people with dementia in different roles and have absolutely recognised the importance and the interrelationship between the person, their primary supporter and other family members, and the impact that dementia has on those other family members and how they in turn influence the experience of living with dementia for all of the family. So my concern in the PhD was to include the wider family. And when I started to look at how I was going to do this, what became evident was although there's an increasing amount of research, it's still a very small area, if you like, and not particularly well understood. And that prompted Jan and I to have some discussions about how I might address that and use that to inform my research. So we started down the route of looking at the research evidence. And that prompted us to carry out a systematic synthesis of the qualitative research in the area, given that that's actually the primary source of evidence. There are some quantitative studies, but a lot of it is qualitative research, and for that reason it rarely gets included in systematic reviews. So this presentation is going to provide a bit more background to the synthesis and then explore some of the outcomes of that and think about the implications for research and practice. So perhaps for obvious reasons, I think that one of the people who asked the question really very powerfully illustrated why we should focus on relationships. Irrespective of who we are, the meaning and value of relationships in our lives cannot be understated. A recent study looking at how older people define well-being identified two of those core themes to be about relationships, that older people identify the opportunities to be in relationship with others and contribute to their well-being as being significant to them, and the importance of feeling a sense of belonging in valued relationships and experiences. Clearly in Ireland, as in the UK where I work, there are a significant number of people with dementia, the majority of whom either live at home with or close by or are supported by family members. And it's clear that family caregiving is the linchpin of dementia care. It's the reason why people with dementia remain at home largely. I think what's also important to recognise is that the experience of living with dementia in a sense can be likened a bit to the course that a river will take. Often that means a changing experience, a changing journey that will be potentially with periods of calm, but also periods where it feels like you're going through rapids, going down a waterfall, and not really necessarily being able to make sense and understand that experience. But it will inevitably be influenced by the people we're with, the environment within which we experience dementia, the course of the illness, and things like the opportunities to enjoy life over time, and obviously the availability of support to help you through those difficult points in that journey, and not just support from relationships that are important to you, but also support from the wider community and indeed from society. So our lives with dementia involve considerable change and challenges. Each family's experience is unique for them as a whole and for each person within that family. The changes that are brought about by dementia require that all family members, including the person with dementia, engage in an ongoing process of assimilation, adaptation, and adjustment. And that process may not be the same for each person in that family context. However, the acknowledgement of the relationship and the reciprocal influence between relationships and dementia is a relatively recent addition to research. As many of you will be aware, a lot of the research historically has focused either on the caregiving experience or in the last probably 10 to 15 years, maybe a little bit more, on the person living with dementia on their, and their experience. But it's only relatively recently, perhaps in the last 10 years, that we've started to see a recognition that we need to look at the relationship. But the majority of that research focuses on couples, has rarely extended to include other family members, or indeed the potential impact on the wider family, and often excludes the perspective of the person with dementia. And in many studies, their voice is often absent. Nevertheless, a really seminal piece of research done in the USA that looked at wider families identified that families absorb dementia into their collective identity. It becomes the whole family's challenge to manage, although inevitably, as I said, each person may experience that and address it differently. So what we chose to do was look at specifically a number of in-depth qualitative studies that had been published over the past 11 years, recognising that those results have often not been included in systematic reviews. And while, look, bringing those studies together is not generalisable, it can certainly provide us with a deeper insight into how relationships and dementia impact each other. Our aim was to understand what's currently known about the reciprocal influence between family relationships and dementia from the perspective of the family, including the person with dementia, and what implications that might have for research and practice. So we reviewed 11 articles where the central theme of the article was the relationship between the person and their family. The articles all addressed that through in-depth interviews. With 8 of the articles, they interviewed families at a single point in time. 3 others were longitudinal. 8 of the articles interviewed cohabiting couples, so less of them looked at other relationships. So 2 of the 3 other studies focused on adult-daughter-mother relationships and 1 on a 3-generational family. I think it's important, and I'll go back to this later when we look at the implications, it's important to acknowledge that these studies focused on people who had Alzheimer's disease, vascular or mixed dementia. Okay. The limitations of this systematic synthesis are or include the fact that there's a lack of representation of different relationships, such as those that I've mentioned and that are highlighted here, and a lack of representation of different forms of dementia. They also don't address families from migrant and minority communities, and it's a largely cross-sectional design. So inevitably that limits the relevance of our findings to other communities and highlights areas for further research. Four superordinate themes were identified in our synthesis, and this slide, I'm sure you can't see it, but hopefully it'll give you some opportunity for reflection when you see the final presentations. Four superordinate themes were identified, and as you can see, there was a fair spread across those themes from each of the articles, although less so. One of the critical things that this synthesis identified was in three of those themes, a sort of continuum from positive to negative. And as you can see on this, the negative experiences were less in evidence in the research. So the first superordinate theme involved a shared history. This also had two poles of initially a good life together, and this involved couples expressing, and it was largely couples that contributed to this theme, expressing positive feelings about their shared history. So, for example, in this quote, the authors identify that although Jane's statements were brief, such as "he's the best thing I've ever had," they were often paired with grins and glances towards Tom as she reached for his hand or his arm to hold, and Tom reciprocating that, making statements such as "she's been a wonderful, wonderful wife, and I don't think I could have found a better match for me." So it was very much in evidence that couples talked about positive feelings about their shared history. This also involved expressions of a commitment to each other, including the need and the recognition of the need to compromise to maintain togetherness throughout their lives together. So in this quote, Mr. and Mrs. Martin highlight the importance of managing some of the challenges that occurred throughout their lives, and Mrs. Martin in particular says, "But together we also come around. We don't segregate, we don't separate, we're together." Another feature of this particular sub-theme was recognising the contribution that each had made to the relationship and to each other. And indeed, this also reflected that this often for couples meant that that they used that as a reason for the caring that was now taking place. It also involved resolving or accommodating disagreements. So in this quote, recognising that the person with dementia was saying it's a balance, and if I want to be okay between us, then I just have to make sure that nothing goes between us, so we don't go to bed with a bad attitude, you know, so the people resolve what they're doing. That was a very clear sense. So only one adult daughter-mother study contributed to this sub-theme. And in this case, only the daughter's narrative was quoted. But in a similar way, she identified or reflected upon a shared history which was characterised by reciprocity. So the The opposite corollary of this was disconnectedness, and that often reflected negative perceptions of a shared relationship history. And in this particular quote, the daughter talked about how their relationship was characterised by, from her point of view, violent outbursts from her mother. So she'd throw knives, forks, saucepans, you name it, she threw it. This was very much the central theme of the article. In disconnectedness as well as a shared relational history, a good life together, it was very clear that links were made between past and current relationship quality by many of the families there. So the next superordinate theme is negotiating the impact of the relationship on of dementia on the relationship. All 11 articles contributed to this sub-theme, and two sub-themes emerged: a problem shared and minimising. So a problem shared involved couples actively managing the impact of dementia together and continuing to express their commitment to each other. So Peter, in this quote, talks about, you know, I was just going to say, yeah, you've got to stick together. And Denise, who has dementia, saying, yeah, there's lots of love in this house. And Peter identifying, that's the main thing to me anyway. This was equally evident, although less commonly, in the relationships between mother and daughter. And so this lady with dementia talks about the relationship between her and her daughter as being good and depending on her quite a bit and recognising that she's always there for her. What was also evident was that open communication and managing together was a feature of this theme, and that involved mutual respect, appreciation and reciprocity. That was often demonstrated through, for example, support and continuation of valued activities that were from the point of view of the person who was involved in supporting the person with dementia, often involved maintaining the identity and functioning of the person with dementia. And that often the person living with dementia acknowledged that. So, for example, this lady talked about when she was in the hospital, her daughter was able to talk to the doctors and nurses in a way that she couldn't, that she goes to the doctors with her, she listens, she keeps it all straight in my mind. So she felt very much that her daughter was supporting her and supporting her to continue to manage things that she found to be quite complicated. It was also evident that some of these strategies occurred without necessarily the awareness of the person with dementia. And there was almost a sense of the family member scaffolding or developing strategies to support the family member with dementia in that way. So this lady says, he will say, shall I make you a cup of tea? Now, if I go out there, there'll probably be tea spilt, but it doesn't matter because it's just tea. I'll get up early in the morning and I'll just clean it. And she goes on to say that he's not aware that she does that, but she does it to enable him to carry on with something important to him and important to her. It also involved continuing to compromise to sustain the relationship and live for today. So from this person's perspective who has dementia, it's nothing to be happy for, but you have to accept these conditions and do as good as possible. So the disease is on another plane. It doesn't have to affect others. And in this respect, many of the participants in these studies identified that dementia was held apart from the relationship rather than defining it. The other side of this particular theme was that of working apart, which very closely reflected the work of John Keady in his PhD. He found or described working apart as occurring where couples have experienced difficulties in their past or current relationships and that their relationship continues to deteriorate, leading to feelings of entrapment. This concept was particularly relevant to a smaller number of the participants in the studies. Contributions came from all relationships addressed within the review, and was addressed by often a loss of that connectedness. So this family member highlights a change in the relationship of having their own world besides the one that they have with the person. And in some family members, this created feelings of powerlessness or a breakdown. So this adult daughter talked about there being no rewards in the relationship at all. And since her mother had come to live with them, she found herself so stressed and upset that she sometimes wishes she were dead. This led to further problems In that often it meant that the person with dementia was positioned as the problem rather than holding the dementia apart from the relationship. So, for example, in this quote, no, he doesn't react, he doesn't care. Surely that's why it's getting worse so quickly. He quits. He's quit everything. He doesn't care, and that's why it goes so quickly. So really, this lady was, in a sense, seeing him as the problem, blaming him for not actually trying hard enough, and blaming the person for the difficulties. This sometimes led to family members using deception and confrontation to manage the situation. And so in this quote, which is an example from my PhD, the daughter, Alex, talks about her father and says, and you have to raise your voice to him to stop him doing it. Sorry, the son-in-law. You have to raise your voice to stop him doing it, and then he's fine. And then give him half an hour and he'll be really nice to Sarah. That's his daughter, the gentleman's daughter. But the time when it's happening, he can be awful to her. He doesn't do it to me. So he's quite confrontational with his father-in-law. In response to this, the people with dementia in the study, and indeed in my PhD, use resistance or denial as a way of maintaining identity and self-esteem. And open communication was also... So the third superordinate theme was around openness and awareness. And that involved making meaning, which often involved open communication as a central strategy, even though this means difficult conversations. And in this example, again from my PhD, Alistair and Kate are talking about the impact of dementia upon their relationship and clearly finding it very difficult, finding it a particular challenge, but nevertheless a willingness to have those conversations. This also, as with the previous theme, involved positioning dementia as the problem rather than the person. So Kate reflects on the fact that Alistair often finds that he becomes very frustrated, and when he gets frustrated, he gets very angry. But since the diagnosis, we know what's going on, we kind of work around it, which Alistair acknowledges and indeed later in the conversation openly discusses how they do that. So couples and families in this studies highlighted that it was a process of gradual adjustment that often involved taking things one day at a time. The opposite corollary of this was minimising, and in this case, denial was often central to this process and could be used either by the person or their family. In this quote, the person with dementia is clearly trying to have an open conversation about their fears and concerns, and the family member is wanting not to have that conversation, is wanting to tamp it down. Well, don't worry about it. So in very many respects, is not wishing to have that conversation. This, as a consequence, often involved resistance, often from the person with dementia. So in this example, Sue is talking about asking Roy to do something for her, but recognising that Roy is struggling with it, but saying it in quite a confrontational way. So it's not just what she says, it's how she says it. She's clearly very angry with him. And his response is, I'm not a domestic. And it was said like that. It was said very powerfully. He didn't want to be confronted with that. And that was a feature throughout the interview. The final superordinate theme reflected the ongoing and often very challenging experience of dementia that included many things, and I'm just going to reflect on a couple of them. The first was a sense of shifting responsibilities, and clearly what dementia brings is a complex process of negotiating involving noticing and managing risk, identifying the help needed, and at the same time attempting to maintain the identity of the person with dementia. So in this case, this family were, this son was trying to recognise that actually they don't like leaving mum alone, that they also want to maintain her identity as a grandparent. So they include her in going swimming with their daughter, but the subtext is very clear that actually it's about the fact that they can't either leave her alone with her daughter, with her granddaughter, or indeed leave her alone at home on her own. Other issues which were raised in this sub-theme were around the challenges that people felt about time together and time apart, and that people recognised that as dementia progressed, that became a particular problem, and particularly so for couples, and that shifting roles and responsibilities often impacted upon this. And not surprisingly, loss was also a particular theme. And in this context, this family member talks about the loss she experienced in recognising that her husband doesn't always know who she is. So if we view these 11 articles separately, then we can see articles which often present either a largely positive or indeed negative view of the impact of dementia on relationships. In bringing these articles together, we have been able to achieve a more nuanced view, reflected in the way that the first three themes have both positive and negative poles. There are clearly significant implications for this. I think this synthesis highlights that the particular psychosocial challenges that dementia brings for all people in the relationship. And this has parallels with Roland's work that looks at a psychosocial typology of chronic and life-threatening illnesses. He identifies that we need to address not only the biomedical construct of illnesses, but also their duration, the course, the degree of incapacity and the outcome, the life stage at which they occur, and the impact that they have on the relationship and the way in which that relationship is negotiated. Clearly, what that means is that we need to think about, in practice, the quality of previous and current relationships. That is not to suggest that there's an immediate link between having a good previous relationship and that the adaptation and adjustment to dementia will necessarily mean that that's always positive. Indeed, some research has highlighted that where family members have a good relationship, sometimes that means that the transition to dementia and coping with dementia actually causes negative experiences and negative feelings. But it is clear that we need to recognise that. What is also evident is that dementia impacts differently on couple and wider family relationships, but we need more research to understand that. Coping strategies are in evidence in this systematic synthesis, such as scaffolding or positioning the person with dementia. Those are clearly things which need to alert us to areas that we need to focus on in terms of how we practice with people with dementia and their families. But what is particularly evident, and I think very powerful in this synthesis, is that people living with dementia are active participants in working actively to maintain the relationships, make sense of the impact that dementia brings, manage the changes it brings, and that they demonstrate a continued emotional awareness of what is happening, not only for themselves, but also for their family members. What it also highlights is that positions of denial and resistance appear to be the consequence of previously poor relationships, being positioned as the problem, and a lack of synchronicity in awareness, understanding, and I would argue, different stages in adjustment that may well have really significant implications for how people make sense of it in a relationship, and clearly, therefore, how they engage with others, and particularly with us as professionals. So effective adaptation to dementia may involve emotional connectedness and open communication, the capacity of the all parties in the relationship to work together, positioning dementia as the problem rather than the person, and holding it apart from the relationship while managing its impact on day-to-day life, and the active participation of the person with dementia in this process. There are a number of implications for research. Research has commonly focused on strengths and adaptive characteristics of couple relationships. There is minimal material about the negative impact. It is actually really difficult to recruit people to research who have a negative relationship, perhaps for obvious reasons. I think out of the, because I'm doing a longitudinal study, I'm working with seven families. Out of those seven families, I would say that probably two don't have a brilliant relationship, but I think that's probably unusual. It's quite difficult to recruit families who don't have a good relationship. But we need to think about how we can do that, because we need to understand that more nuanced view. And I think at the moment, we don't understand enough about that. We don't have enough information about how past conflicts influence current experience. And there are consequences for that. Polarisation is a risk. We can continue to see it as either all good or all bad, and not actually recognise that it is much more complex than that. So we need to address that within research, and I would argue in practice. We need to extend to broader intergenerational relationships. Mary Mittleman, in the work she's done in the States, has highlighted one of the key factors influencing coping within couple relationships is the wider family and the relationship they have with the wider family. So there is also an emerging evidence base, for example, in young onset dementia, of the impact on children and young people, of their experience of a parent with dementia. And given we have an increasing number of grandparents as very significant carers in grandchildren's lives, that's also a factor we need to think about. Some of the other areas are, this research is largely focused on people with Alzheimer's disease. The impact of other less common forms of dementia is less well understood. Hence the reason why I'm doing my PhD looking at frontotemporal dementia. It is very different, and the experience of it is very different. The loss of empathy and the change in social awareness at a very early stage, often very subtle changes, are really difficult for family members to make sense of, including the person with the diagnosis. There is the potential for differences in psychosocial adjustment across different family members, and we don't yet understand enough about how that might influence things. And much of the research is cross-sectional, which inevitably has implications. Dementia is a much longer journey, and only seeing it at one point in time isn't necessarily helpful. Many of the studies don't give enough detail to contextualise the experience, so we don't know, for example, what influence support systems have, how support helps people to cope. And they often focus on traditional family relationships. So, for example, we don't know much about how some of the families that I mentioned before, including, for example, migrant and minority communities, might experience it. There are also implications for practice over and above those that I've already mentioned, one of which is using the label carer. It's a particular bugbear of mine, and I'm really glad somebody else raised it. I have real concerns about using the label carer just as I have concerns about labelling people with dementia as dementia first, person second. If we don't recognise the relationship, then we're immediately not recognising something that is incredibly important in the person and their family's life. Respect for the relational context in which dementia occurs is fundamental to our practice and should inform our practice. And unfortunately, I think service systems use labels far too often as shorthand for working with people. But there's a very real risk that we lose sight of what people need by doing that. So we need to think about how we can support the person with dementia to engage in relational work. I think it's not a surprise that we still don't have that much evidence of how people with dementia experience the relationship. We need to understand more about that. And we need to think about how we define families, because what's very evident is what is family to me will be different from family to the next person. We tend to work, again, with this very boundaried idea, and yet many of the people that I am working with in my study and in my practice often include lots of different relationships as family. We need to address and assess previous and current relationship quality as a part of our work with people. And we need to think about the psychosocial consequences of dementia for the family. We have currently within the UK, and I'm sure elsewhere, a massive push to thinking about early diagnosis. But if we don't look at the psychosocial consequences, then an early diagnosis is no better than a later one. We have to start to look at the much broader context in which dementia occurs within if we are to truly help people and enable people to cope. We need to think about how relationships are negotiated and understood, and how those change over time, and how roles are defined, and how challenges have previously been managed within the relationship, and how that influences how people manage them now. And this clearly has to inform timely and early interventions. Thank you.